Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sacred conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We, at Us Lifting Us, have developed an exact methodology on how to build the global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. At that time, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, please click on the Follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would love to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs, as well as your topic suggestions for future programs. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Baba Hakima, a founding member of ULU. Tonight's topic is The Market Women of Charleston, South Carolina. Peace, Baba Hakima. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, sis. And as always, it's good to join you on these third Thursdays as I always say, they seem to come around so quickly. But, of course, we've got a lot to talk about, so maybe they should come around quicker. But anyway, I'm doing well.
It's good to know that, Baba Hakima. Baba Hakima, tell the family about the Market Women of Charleston, South Carolina. I think I had not heard of them until you mentioned them maybe last month on the program, but it was okay. Recently, and it was from your mouth.
Okay, good enough. Well, as ULU members know, and hopefully some of our friends know, we're advancing a very progressive and innovative economic empowerment model that we call New Ujamaa. We got a lot to learn from some of the things that we've done in the past as well. And in addition to discussions about Black Wall Street or what we've done in other periods more recent, the history of our people during the enslavement periods as it relates to economic savvy is something that we must learn from as well. The subject of Market Women of Charleston, and I'm guessing that some of the same things went on maybe in Savannah, probably in Mobile and New Orleans, but it's been studied and brought to light, especially around Charleston. Essentially, what's happening is that the plantations in and around Charleston, South Carolina, on market day, would send women from the plantations with commodities from the farm or from the plantation with instructions to go into the city, and Charleston had a very famous marketplace. But go into the city and trade the commodities from the plantation to get needed supplies and goods for the plantation. And the women, in fact, did so, but they went above and beyond simply trading the commodities that they had from the plantation to what the plantation needed. What they would do through a sophisticated system and network of trading and trading partners, they would take the commodity that they brought from the plantation, trade it for another commodity, trade it again. So they would involve themselves in several series of trades before they actually secured the commodity that the plantation needed. But in the process, they would have made money, or they would have gotten commodities that they needed for themselves, their children, and other enslaved Africans on the plantation. Now remember, Charleston is a port city. Mm-hmm. It's an international city. And so it's not just fruits, vegetables, and herbs that are in the marketplace. They are there, those as well as other fruits, vegetables, and herbs from other parts of the country and the world, but they're also finished goods. There are tools, there are cloths, there are other products, goods, and from around the country and around the world in the marketplace as well. Mm-hmm. And then there's another element that is really important for us to understand, is that there are also some of the market women that are not from rural plantations. Some of them are from urban plantations. Some of them live right in the city. They're enslaved Africans. They're on urban plantations, but the urban women and the rural women, both enslaved, developed over time a very sophisticated trading cartel. They not only were successful in their own right, the word got around. The plantation owners knew what was happening. They interceded and got a cut from the trade that the women mastered. And it was so successful that at a point they were the dominant trading influence over the whole marketplace. So much so that the merchants had to at some point shut them down. But for many, many years, they were the master traders. And, of course, we know from our history that that was the steel that was brought to these shores with our people, because the African women in West Africa in particular were the masters of the marketplace. You know, they were the organizers, the persons who made the marketplace hum, so to speak. But there were also finished goods that Africans produced as well in the marketplace. Most famous of all of them probably are the wheatgrass baskets that when you go to Charleston today, especially at the visiting center and in the marketplace, you'll see people actually sitting right there weaving the baskets and selling the baskets. And you can intercede and get baskets woven, maybe with an element representing your family or some differentiation that you may request. And so the marketplace was extremely vibrant, but the residue of knowledge and skill and the wisdom that was in our sisters, again, came to fore such that they controlled the marketplace. And again, the plantation owners caught wind of it, and then they would allow it, and they would get their cut, you know, their payoff, so to speak. And what the genius of the African women in the marketplace and the fact that they developed the skill to actually control much of the commerce in the marketplace gives us clues to some of the things that we need to be aware of today. And, of course, in Ulu, we, as I mentioned earlier, we have branded our particular model of economic empowerment as New Ujamaa. And, of course, Ujamaa is cooperative economics. But for us, when we add new to it, what we are essentially saying is African-centered cooperative economics as opposed to individually centered economics. But what we are saying is that we have to intervene in the economic life structure process in our local communities so that we incrementally make a difference in empowerment. In other words, to gradually incrementally gain greater and greater and greater control of the economy of our local communities. And in the coming days, we will, in the coming third Thursdays and maybe at other times, we'll go into that deeper. But the skill of the market women of Charleston, they deliberately and instinctively intervene in the commercial flow, the energy flow of the marketplace, so that they walked away day or that weekend with a greater amount of resources than they came to the marketplace with, realizing they had additional needs, their families and fellow comrades on the plantations had additional needs. So they found ways to take what the plantation gave them to go to the market with, and through their ingenuity, they increased the value of what it is that they initially had. And so what I'm saying, in no uncertain way, that we are the descendants of those market women, some of us are, and we must display today that wisdom, that knowledge, that skill to enter and engage the marketplace such that at the end of the day, so to speak, we would have realized a greater value than we came into the marketplace with, whatever that commodity is. In Ulu, our model calls for the creation, building of community-owned business enterprises, and because we own the enterprises, we also own the surplus. Now, the market women of Charleston, when they traded the commodity that they came to the market with from the plantation, let's say it was eggs that they came to the marketplace with, and let's say that they were instructed to come back to the farm with axes or hatchets or nails or some other finished goods or cloth, whatever it was. So the market women came in with eggs. They traded it for who knows what. But they, for a moment, they were in control of that commodity. It may have been cloth. It may have been, you know, it may have been soap. It may have been molasses. It doesn't really matter what it was. But they had the skill to position themselves so that they were, I guess, trading up and trading a thing for a particular value for something that strategically had a greater value, and so that at the end of the day, they were in a position to acquire the needs of the plantation. But in between that first trade and that last trade, they had realized a surplus, a gain, such that they could acquire goods or just keep the money. Because in most cases, in many cases, it was the fact that they came back with money that they could trade in other ways. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, you know, they may have passed the few bucks to the plantation owners to keep that up. We often talk about Black Wall Street and our intervention in the economic life cycle in those communities. And, of course, when we talk about Black Wall Street, we know that we're not just talking about Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're talking about more than 100 communities of business excellence scattered throughout the country. It may have been Harlem. It may have been Hayti in Durham. It may have been Buttermilk Bottom, wherever we were. But those were communities of business excellence, and we're going to talk more about those as we go as well, because it's not a simple thing to recreate what we would call Black Wall Street today, because there's some different variables. But at the end of the day, we got to do it. We've got to create Communities of Business Excellence, again, drawing on all of our experience. And, of course, we know that we had co-ops, commercial, that we currently call co-ops, even before emancipation, and certainly after emancipation, some of them, you know, gave sustenance, gave support to the civil rights movement. And, of course, Fannie Lou Hamer is one of the very popular persons who were involved in the co-op movement and the civil rights, human rights movement as well. So I just wanted to lead that off, lead the discussion off this evening with the skills that we acquired in managing marketplaces on the continent and honed those skills to very high levels where you, through history, you'll see the marketplaces and the trade routes in East Africa, West Africa, across North Africa, almost everywhere we were. But, of course, we know that we brought some of those skills to the Americas with us. And I'm almost certain that an analysis will show that we did the same thing in Central and South America and in the Caribbean as well. But I want to highlight the market women of Charleston. And brothers and sisters, if you got the email for the subject tonight, if you click on the image of the African women in the marketplace on the flyer, it'll open up to a nice article on the Charleston market and the influence of our sisters in that environment. But it's not just that one article. There are many articles about that influence and I guess the main thing is because Charleston is a port city, and their skill and stature was very likely a global phenomenon. In other words, it was known that if you're on the high seas and you happen to dock in Charleston and you happen to visit the Charleston market, which was famous and is still famous, you would almost certainly know that there was a very unique presence there. And it was these African women participating in the trade, organizing, participating, and again, they were not only the sisters that came from the plantations in the rural areas, but they were the sisters who were enslaved Africans in the city. And of course, those of you who have gone to Charleston, you see still preserved urban city plantations, where you'll see a big house in the middle of the city, and you'll see it fenced off, and you'll see the big house in the front, and you'll see slave quarters in the back. You may see a carriage house in between, but it's only a block or two, you know, urban plantations. So, again, remember that the market women of Charleston were primarily the sisters from the rural, but they were also they also related and formed this cartel with sisters in the urban setting as well. So now you know about the market women of Charleston.
Yes, I do. Thank you for for that information. I didn't have.
Yeah.
So you say, I think I heard you say more than once that the Charleston market is still in operation. Is that the same market that has run all of these years?
Well, it's pretty much a tourist location now, but commodities are still being sold. And this was not just an outdoor market. There was much of it that was indoors as well. So just imagine not only the produce, but all of the finished goods, the cloth that may have come from New England or from London or wherever. And again, you're talking about pots and pans and oil lamps and any number of things, bedpans and whatever.
Right, gotcha.
So, so any number of things too. But yeah, the market is still a live market. It's probably more a tourist attraction than anything, but you can pick up commodities there in the marketplace as well. You know, obviously the produce and the other farm crops wouldn't be as paramount today as it would have been then. But yeah, the marketplace is still alive. I had a very eventful tour guide when my wife and I visited Charleston. It was a Porgy and Bess tour. The tour guide was a brother, and of course we're in a van. And this brother was extremely talented. And so he was singing the songs from the musical, Porgy and Bess, as we went along. And so much of what I'm saying to you now, he confirmed as well in terms of the market women of Charleston. But more than anything else, in my just bumping into things about Charleston, the market women surfaced. But there's so much more about Charleston, of course, when we visit. It's probably among the top five cities in America for tourism. You wouldn't think that lowly Charleston, South Carolina, has that many visitors. But it's, I would say, in the top five or six cities in America for tourism. And the Charleston, I guess, Chamber of Commerce or the city government do a good job in promoting tourism. And but the main thing I want to stress, and hopefully some of our listeners will press on their keypad and join the conversation. But the lesson to be learned is that even during the time or heyday of our enslavement, some of us had the wisdom and the courage to intervene in a way that produced greater wealth, but intervene in a process. Intervene in the flow of a currency, you know, dollars and other commodities, but to intervene in a very artful way such that at the end of the day, surplus was in the hands of these women. So I want to make sure that we understand that it was not just a woman who came to the marketplace and did what she did. These were women who were in a cartel. They were in a conspiracy, to say the least. They conspired to control the marketplace. I'm sure it wasn't a conspiracy the first day, but they one may have helped the other get a particular commodity. In other words, they help each other, and at the end of the day, so all of them were empowered. So they took the skills and cunning of a group of women and forged a way of manipulating the marketplace such that the brothers and sisters on the plantation got a benefit from their intervention. Because they came back to the plantation. They came back, if it was money or if it was other commodities, They, of course, mm-hmm. shared them with their families, and so it was an ingenious process, and it just speaks to what is already in us that has to be cultivated, because as we, you know, in our annual meeting and convention 2 weeks ago, almost 2 weeks ago, we talked about our process being that of intervening in the economic life of our community so that things would be rearranged so that after a series of turns and times, we would have transformed these communities so that they would function in a way that, at the end of the day, there would be more surplus
mm-hmm.
saved or realized or captured than would otherwise be the case, because the general case is that almost as much resources flow out of our community as come into our community. It's almost a wash. In other words,
mm-hmm.
it's not a situation where we are empowered by participation in the global marketplace. It's almost a wash. I mean, certainly there's some benefit in terms of job creation for the brothers and sisters who own their own businesses. There's some surplus there. But for the whole community, there is very little to show for our economic activity at the end of the day. Some have suggested that the economic turns or money stays in our community less than one day. And certainly if revenue or economic energy doesn't stay in our community longer, then we're going to always be in a starved position. We're not going to take in economic calories so that we can get fat, so to speak. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But this it's ingenious, the things that not only we have done in Charleston, but globally, the things that we've done to survive. We have not necessarily thrived, but we have survived with relative success. It's a miracle that there are any Africans on the planet, because certainly the things that we've gone through, you know, were not necessarily intended to have us be present as we are today.
Sure.
Yeah. Are there any hands raised?
No, there are no hands up at this time, Papa.
Good. One of the things that, and by the way, I want to thank you for After the Storm.
okay.
Yeah, brothers and sisters won't know what we're talking about, but we had talked about the fact that in our communities and as a part of human rationale and normalcy, when a hurricane or a tornado or some storm comes through the community and tears up everything, we don't and we are not inclined to go after the storm and petition it to come back and clean up or repair what it had destroyed. And when I first mentioned that, Sister Q gave a chuckle, and I knew it was a chuckle of, amen, I understand where you're coming from. And mm-hmm. so Sister Q has created a poster with After the Storm and kind of showing the ravages of the storm and reminding us that the the storm is not encouraged to come back and clean up after itself. But that's essentially some of the logic of what we are talking about in terms of the marketplace. It's just kind of what we would call in the community mother wit, or just common mm-hmm. sense. And the intervention of the women in Charleston, and there is mention in some of the articles, Savannah as well, and they're not that far apart, and they're both port cities, and mm-hmm. a part of the Low Country, part of what we're talking about, are the grasslands. I'm not sure the plant that that the basket weaving was involved with in West Africa, but mm-hmm. in South Carolina it was wheat grass, and it's a natural grass to those lowlands. And so when you go and visit Charleston, you see the basket weaving. Those are not mm-hmm. Plants whatever that element is, the straw. That's not a straw from West Africa. That's a straw from South Carolina. But the skills, the routine for building the basket is inherited from our sisters in West Africa. So, but the point mm-hmm. I'm making is that the same mother wit or common sense that allows the people who've been inundated by a storm to simply assess their ability, the tools that they have. Obviously, they're devastated, but they realize that the storm did what storms do.
Good
because
job.
That's the nature of storms. Mm-hmm. And then when we look at our situation vis-a-vis an assault on our people, from forces, whether it was from Europe, whether it's from the Middle East, or wherever it may have been from, or wherever it comes from in the future. And yes, human intervention is not the same as a storm. But at the end of the day, and Dr. Clark says it probably better than I could ever say it. He says that freedom is something that you take with your own hands or you don't have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it cannot be given to you. It can only be taken and fashioned with your own hands. So the things that the informed instinct of the women, the market women of Charleston, was essentially the same mother wit that and a natural response that most of us would take during after the ravages of the storm. We would assess, you know, our ability, the tools, the material, and we would build. And okay. essentially we know that in the current situation that's the I would say the missing element, or what we must strengthen. Yes, there are things that we must do as it relates to involvement in any number of things, any number of movements, any number of appeals. But at the end of the day, the community is going to be secure based on the systems and patterns of human activity we install and make firm as practices in our community, so that those practices continue. And much as we talked about earlier in terms of the effect of the market women, at the end of the day, we're looking for a gain or a surplus or an increase, so that we can plow it back in can reinvest it, can reinvigorate the community and cause it to grow and to repeat that process over and over and over again, such that the nature of the empowered community is that of progressive growth. We have a mantra, liberated minds building liberated communities for the liberation of our people. What we are saying in that mantra is essentially what we are talking about in a nutshell, is that a few of us who have sovereign consciousness or sovereign intellect or do-for-self attitude and know the importance of economics to our overall social development, then those liberated minds format the things that have to be done, the systems that have to be installed in building liberated communities. These liberated communities are not unaware of the economic flow, imperatives, waves, systems, things that happen in the economy in the local communities, much the way the market women understood the marketplace. So when we talk about liberated communities, we're talking about looking at our communities and seeing and analyzing what moves can we make to firm up what we are doing that is healthy, and what moves can we make to minimize the things that we are doing that are unhealthy, but also to firm up what to do to eliminate the predators and the negative influencers in our community. And the magic, of course, is to do what we just mentioned, those things, but also to create new institutions in the community, economic institutions, businesses that produce jobs, that provide needed goods and services, that stimulate in many ways the economic and social life of the communities, but at the end of the day, produce a surplus, a gain, or you may say a profit, that could be turned back into the community to help it grow incrementally bigger, stronger, and that over time you not only increase the number of productive forces in the community, but you produce them at a greater size and a greater impact, and you include the acquisition of land, buildings and structures, machinery, and of course, as you do that, you naturally impact other elements of the social life of the community. But we know that economics is at the base, and Dr. Clark also said something that's instructive in terms of how we view economics and the other aspects of the social life of the community. Excuse me. He says that economics is what is needed to take care of your basic needs and, of course, some of your wants. And he says then that politics is how you organize your economy. He's not talking about electoral politics. He's talking about governance, how you organize your economics. And then culture is how you season the two. So culture is how you season your politics and how you season your economics. But at the floor, you know, of course, as Claude Anderson often points, that you know, you got to build that first level, the economics, and then you from there you can buy everything else. Or pay
right.
for it, including buying politicians. I laugh when he says that, but that's true.
Right.
That's what we see all the time. Yes.
For sure. We have a hand up, Baba. So
okay.
I'm going to take that call. Caller with the last four digits, 3440, please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment, or ask your question. Thank you. 3440, we can't hear you. Are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Now I can hear you.
Hello?
Thank you.
Oh,
yeah,
hey,
we can hear you now.
Baba and Sister Q, this is Brother Shabaka calling from South Florida. Very, very good conversation going on tonight. I want to add, well, a couple of things happened today, and as you was reciting, Baba, you know, it came to mind that I needed to get your thoughts on this. One of the things that happened, I was attempting to get some gas. And I don't usually like to use my card, my plastic, but I left my money at home. but I had money in my account. I went to get the gas, and my thing was denied. And so I'm wondering, I said, now, what the heck is going on here, you know? And then later on, really, I got a text message asking me, was I the one making the transaction or attempting to make the transaction? I did not see the text message until I got home. All right. So I want you to keep that in mind. And I'm going to put it in the context of what you were talking about in a minute. The other thing that happened was that I was looking at a video. All right, which was discussing economics, and it was talking about land grab. I looked at the video, I think, yesterday. All right, but it was my mind came to deny it. Now, the context I want to put it in is this. There is a regulatory environment that we have the regulation by the federal government and the regulation by the economic entities that are outside of the community but have their tentacles inside of the community. All right, so I'm looking for how do we, as we begin to develop our plan, what do you see as helping in operationalizing our plan necessary, all right, to keep some of these impediments or detractions from inhibiting our ability to move forward with what you just described, based on that we know we have, going back to the market women from market women who talk about. All of the cities, because of forced segregation in which we develop. We're not forced, technically we don't have a real force by force economically. But I'm saying that we know that we're in the environment that we're in. We know where we want to go. What tools do we need to sustain or possess, all right, as we move forward?
Yeah.
All right, I think you can adjust to my question.
I do. And it's so timely and important because there are people that you know and I know that are involved in activity seeking to hold on to land that's been in the family a long time. And, of course, they're always predators. I think as we in Ulu develop our local chapters, and we call them UBCs, we want to partner with organizations and institutions that not only educate on the moves that you point to that are governmental or extra governmental, but not only educate to help our people better understand how to hold on to land, how to put land in trust and other tools that we would need, but also develop agencies that actually were hands-on to assist our people in filing the necessary paperwork and be timely with it. And then we're probably going to have to go a little beyond that and identify firms that will go into probate courts and other courts to help stave off the land loss and asset loss that that occurs. There are elements that are doing that now, but like many things in our community, they are underdeveloped, underfunded, maybe even underappreciated. But we must, as a formation in the community, join with other brothers and sisters who have that stemming land loss as a part of their agenda. So we've got to be vigilant and maybe even tap into our brothers and sisters who in government and who are in corporate America so that we are better prepared to understand some of the things that are coming down the pipeline that maybe not have surfaced as a policy or strategy yet, but that some of our people may even have a foreknowledge of. But you're pointing to something that is very important. And for us, acquiring properties, land, and other holdings, we certainly need to know the strategies and methods for holding on to them and minimizing the pitfalls so that we don't have to get distracted in long struggles to maintain them. So what we need to do to stay compliant, to stay ahead of the game, so to speak. So I appreciate the question. And I saw a video several years ago, and I think it's still up, where a European specialized in taking land from Africans, and he bragged about it. He said, yes. Mm. He said, that's my business. You know, he attacks where land is left to multiple heirs, and he goes in, and he functions throughout the South, maybe even beyond the South. But he says, you know, it's a legitimate business. You know, I'm just a businessman. And so, yeah, there are jackals out there, and they know what they're doing. They're awful, they're skillful. They're firms, not just individuals, who all day, every day, look for opportunities to take land away from unsuspecting families and individuals who simply don't know and who may have allowed their taxes to lapse or inappropriate will or other filings that may have been deficient in one way or another. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Brother Shibaka.
That's very important. It's almost you've got to be defensive as you are offensive. You've got to think mm-hmm. through every possible scenario. You won't think through everyone, but you've got to be, your antennas have got to be up. So you want to be defensive as you are offensive. Build and you know, protect your flank, so to speak. Yes. Well, we've got a few more minutes.
I was going to say there are no more hands up right now, so we have a few more minutes.
Good. Yeah. Right. And I would encourage all of our listeners to go to our website, of course, play the 3-minute video, A Serious Question for You, and forward that video, forward the website if you choose to, but forward the video. That little 3-minute video is extremely powerful. And the narration, in the narration, it simply says that taking control of our community is simpler than you think. Not easy, but simple with the right tools. It may not say that exactly that way. And so I would say that the wisdom of the market women of Charleston, given all the resources at our disposal today, they would have and would reorganize, transform our communities from being buckets with a hole in them to pristine buckets of economic excellence. You know, when you just think of the wisdom that it would take, that it took for them to control the marketplace, and think of them being in your community or in Third Ward in Charlotte or on the west side in Charlotte or being in southwest Atlanta or being in Harlem or being whatever, you would naturally conclude that they would do a better job than we are now doing in economic empowerment. And I think the reason that I say that the reason I think that they would do better is that they are looking at what they can do and not petitioning, you know, the plantation owner or petitioning, you know, other elements of the quote-unquote broader society. But, you know, they are, you know, when Booker T says, cast your bucket down where you are, those words are similar to that. In other words, in our communities, especially in some of our communities in the South, but in other places as well, there are there are great resources that with the proper analysis and planning, we can tap into and utilize them to transform our communities from essentially communities that are barely making it to communities that would be thriving. I mentioned to someone a few days ago, there's some satellite imaging that shows an abundance of water underneath the Sahara Desert. There's the equivalent amount of water under the desert as is in the five Great Lakes here in America. It's a huge deposit of water. Now, what that says to me that if you have the intent and you have the technology to bring the water up, you can transform the desert. Now, I use that to say that when we look at our community and the assets that we already possess, there is the ability, the latent ability, to transform our communities and make them oases simply with the resources that are already here or that already flow through our communities. So I'll end my discussion this evening on that, and thank you always for the opportunity to share with the community, and I look forward to another third Sunday. Thursday in the coming months, and again I want to thank you for After the Storm, and we had pretty good feedback on that in terms of how we may use it.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Baba Hakima. And we want to thank everyone that joined us this evening. We invite you to come back next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Out of the drum we come. As a people,